It's Hudson Valley Focus with Tom Sipas on The Beacon.
Yes, it is. And as promised, they are here, Harold King and Johnny Ann Hansen. Congratulations on having a great National Manufacturing Day. You were with me up in Ulster BOCES, but then what five or so of your members and hosted students?
Yeah, we were spread out as a team.
We were all over the
loosely place, yep. All over the Hudson Valley, but we got to see a lot of different people and got to celebrate in a couple of different ways.
Yeah, we had, I think there were tours, Dorsey Metrology.
Yep. You know, did yep. one. MPI.
MPI did one with Dutch
Bosses. And Fairy.
Sonotech and Fairy, yep. And yeah, so they were great. And then, of course, you know, we went back for the ribbon cutting for the new school and got our tours. And that was also a great day. And
honestly, Allendale Machine and Haas, $1 million donation.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was sitting next to Rich Croce, and I don't know why. It was just like the whole thing just like overwhelmed me right at the same time. And I knew that they were getting money, but I didn't really connect all those dots.
Sure.
And so they went up and they unveiled the check, and I'm like actually crying. And Rich whispers to me, he goes, "You're one of us. You know what this is coming." And I was like, I know. But it was just so moving in that moment to see students and, you know,
and to
hear the stories.
To see Jonah, to see Mark, to see Marty up there who've worked so hard through the years to do that. And $1 million is a lot of money for that. The center, the Haas, now the Gene Haas Center for Machining at Ulster BOCES is, it's a one heck of a lab. I mean, it's amazing. That would be a one heck of a machine shop for anybody would be proud to have that equipment and use it. So it's really a great opportunity for the kids. And when you see the kids walking around it, they're so comfortable around the machines. You know, it's their home. It's like literally like their homeroom, and they're very happy there. And it was fun. And I got a little teary too, Johnny. Yeah. I admit it. I was a little.
Well, you weren't like, sitting next to Rich because he would have called you out.
A little sentimental. I was sitting next to Chris Rodriguez.
Well, it was a big deal.
It was
the 12th annual. Yep. Broadcast, but taking us back to that very first one that you and I put together, Harold, in the old performance studio. And the Pathways Academy, Jonah was then the principal of the new Pathways Academy.
I think
he told me he had 14 students, and now to open up this new facility with 1400 students.
1400 students.
You know, not all in manufacturing.
No,
but not all in the Pathways Academy.
That's part of the storyline, right? That this has grown and inspired innovation in other ways and other ways of learning beyond just advanced manufacturing.
Yeah, and one of the things that I think we all should be proud of and appreciate is the learning model that the Pathways Academy, the PTEC school in Ulster County, embraced and started. You know, they have now taken that and rolled it into all the other disciplines at SUNY Ulster. Yeah. So, you know, whether you're in cosmetology or graphic design or auto mechanic, you have industry partners. They're engaged with the community. They're doing internships. They've got guest speakers and the curriculum and development. All those things. It's interconnected, and that makes for a better learning experience,
and
it makes for better employees, and it makes for better employers, by the way.
The most important thing, the poise, the presentation that these students had.
Yeah, it's impressive.
Having grown up interacting with business people, et cetera.
And it's expected of them in the classrooms, too.
Yes.
It's a higher bar, and it's just impressive, and it's nice to be a small part of it.
And what was particularly interesting to me is, Ethan and Tucker, as well as other students, but those are the two that really stand out. Both of them had said on air, by the time I was in eighth grade, I was a troublemaker.
Mm.
And now,
so the path could have been very different.
Very different. Mm-hmm. And, they got into something with the project-based hands-on learning.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're not bored, inspired to learn.
Yeah.
And
I'm seeing a lot of that just in, and you're probably seeing this, that the answer to a lot of things, whether it's anxiety or overthinking, is it's not thinking or reading, it's actually using your hands. Like, that's what it is. The yes. solution to, you know, children who are maybe becoming a little bit troublesome in some ways. Sometimes it is just like, what can we get these kids to do with their hands? And I think that whether it's cosmetology or graphic design, there's something that's interactive and you get that, you know, the I'm going to just say like a dopamine, right? From like, I made this. I did right. this. I created this and there's something to see, which is why jobs in manufacturing are fun, too.
So, yeah, it was 2013, 12 years ago already, I went down to, and I never figured out how I got this invitation, Scientific American invited me to a conference at Google, New York City Google headquarters, went down for the entire day, and a lot of the conversation back then, so 12 years ago, was on project-based learning.
Yeah.
And interestingly, that then the people who were there from Google said, we're more interested in hiring people, you know, not their degree, but their CV and sure. what they have done.
Yeah. Right, that
their
curriculum.
Their portfolio.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
The work
yeah.
that they can show. Yeah, I mean, there's something to be said for it. I mean, we've been seeing it for years, but it's nice to see it overlap across sectors.
Yeah, and you know, six, 8 years ago, we started talking to the first robotics people in the Hudson Valley, and you know, an all volunteer group. And but you see how that has taken off. And I think it's to your point, those robotics challenges. I think
yes.
you know, to John Ann's point, kids are working with their hands. They're rewarding. You know, they like it. To the employer's point, like these are now kids that have worked together in a team. They're solving, you know, problems. There's a lot of critical thinking. There's obviously technical skills and engineering skills, machining skills, because they do everything on their own. But
Steve Costa, I think it was, wants me to come back up, you know, just come back up when they have their robotics competition.
Yeah.
Because
they are going to, this one of the reasons, one of the nice things about the school is they do have that kind of open space that
yes.
they actually can facilitate. They can host events like that. I think they can host up to like 400 people in there, so it's a big deal.
Yes, and then Peter Harris had you know, and we'll discuss this. He wants me to come back periodically and do the broadcast. And as you said, there's the cosmetology.
Yeah, there's
the
a lot more. I think you spoke to the cybersecurity.
Cybersecurity.
She was fascinating. The first I met her was on Friday, and she, you know, retired IBMer who just
yep.
found a calling teaching, and
yes.
she's really really passionate about that.
Yeah, we got to get her the link. She had asked about that to share with her kids.
Yeah.
And the other one, and I'll have to get with Joe Salamone or Peter Harris or somebody. I did not get the card for the young woman who was there from Snap-on Tools.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
They're doing great stuff.
Gosh.
Yeah.
You know,
which also just goes to what they've done that seems innovative is the partnerships, right?
Industry partners.
And the fact
every one of those things, the industry partners.
Yeah. They're not shutting the door to, like, we know education and don't mess with us. They're saying, like, you know, yeah, we know what we are doing and we also want to partner with you, whether it's Haas or the Council of Industry or Snap-on or all those other different
Lincoln
programs.
Welding.
Like, yeah,
I mean,
really.
And
it's brilliant, too.
Yes. And the need for, you know, the really high-end welding. I mean, you know,
yeah.
I got to get back with Jack Nugent. He was supposed to be with us that morning from Maritime Industrial Base. He was not able to do so. But I want to get back with him because this is those high-end welding is absolutely critical for the kinds of things
that he's talking about. And that is something, you know, it starts with a CTE program, but it really, you know, in our world, we really think that is an apprenticeable kind of trade.
Yes.
Yeah. If you're going to do high end, you've got to really learn from a master craftsman.
You know, if
we're
going to go back to building nuclear power plants, you probably want good welds.
Yeah, you want those welds pretty strong.
So it's Harold King, John Ann Hansen in studio. It's 7:16 already on Hudson Valley Focus Live on the Beacon. Let's hear from the Zoles one more time with a sports report, and then back to more conversation here.
Live, local, and unafraid, this is Hudson Valley Focus with Tom Sipas on the Beacon.
It is Hudson Valley Focus on the Beacon. It's also 7:22 on a still kind of dark morning out there. Falling leaves, crisp morning air, the smell of autumn, nature signals it's time to get your home ready for winter. How about make your home winter ready with custom care from DS Home Services? Visit them today, dshomeservices.com, dshomeservices.com. You know, whether it's getting the heating system tuned up, whether it's getting the duct worked clean, or maybe it's time for a new energy efficient heat pump system, they've got it all. DSHomeServices.com, DSHomeServices.com. Really, really, really good people to do business with. So, talking about good people to do business, well, actually, Dave Stewart, owner of DS Home Services, is on the advisory board over at SUNY Ulster.
Oh, small, great. Good. Small connection. Good.
And what I liked was last year, I think it was a Thanksgiving when the people in the industrial arts classes put together a nice Thanksgiving dinner for some of the students, knowing they might not otherwise have it. Dave, no. Dave was one of the big donors to help that program. Really nice. Point being, we've got really great business people. And you, Harold, you and I have said this for years, and people think, oh, no, yeah, you're just making... No, we're not.
There are some really... Yeah, I tell the story. I mean, when hiring Johnny Ann all those years ago, I said, one thing you're really going to appreciate to this job is that we really work with some great people.
Yes.
And that has been probably the one promise I made that I actually kept.
I mean, you did tell me some of the work was dull. I think that might come true.
You might be bored sometimes. Yeah. Some days there's nothing to do.
I have not been bored. No. I've not been bored. There's always something to do. But sometimes it is dull work to do. Just mostly paperwork, department labor stuff. But even that, it gets rewarding because you get it done. Well, I mean, actually, just as a tie into the apprenticeship program, we're in the process, knocking on all the wood, of adding another trade. Emma has been working really hard for a couple of months on this, and it's a project manager trade, which we think will be something that a good amount of people have. It's a one-year program that gets them 144 hours of related instruction plus 2,000 hours of on-the-job training, and a good number of our companies have asked for it. So they're using
absolutely critical.
And, you know, that's also like a hands-on thing. It's really, you can't get that just from a classroom. You have to do the work.
Harold, you remember at the School of Business when Art Palmiotti put together the project management over there.
Yep.
And then I did the piece on, you know, what careers and what kind of salary ranges. Mm-hmm.
Honestly, everything's a project.
Seriously, that's not a joke.
I joke about that in the office too. I'm like, do you want to be a project manager apprentice? Do you want to be a project manager apprentice? We could all do it. Because everything really is. Because nothing that we touch and nothing that you touch is done in 2 minutes and you flip the button and you're over. There's so much more to it. You have to follow up. There's timelines. There's budgeting. There's just a lot of pieces of the
puzzle. But it's also like a symphony orchestra conductor. I'm not kidding about that.
Yeah.
Because it is. Because if you get the sequence of the notes wrong, you've just screwed up the whole damn job.
And then you've made it five times harder.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think we frequently think of project managers like Johnny Ann's husband, who does it in construction, which is like literally what he does. He is a conductor. He is orchestrating, a lot of moving parts and a lot of moving pieces, a lot of finicky talent and a lot of different personalities
and timelines and weather right now.
If one piece in your supply lines is out of sequence, and now the dominoes fall behind there.
Somebody makes a mistake.
That's our actual dinner conversation right here.
Construction, it's very obvious and clear and clean to see, but in other industries, it's also very prevalent, but less obvious. So if you're in a manufacturing environment, one of your projects might be a new product launch, or it might be entering a new market, or it might be whatever.
Right.
I mean,
right.
there's dozens of things.
It could be a new customer. It
right.
could be, something that
we want to improve our onboarding process, whatever it is. Yeah. And so that becomes a project.
Installing a whole new IT system in a firm or small firm.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, you think about the work that they do at MPI. We see the products that they put out, but what's going on behind the scenes in terms of their, leaning out of their facility of best practices of how they, what was that system that with the picking?
No, I know. Yeah, I'll never remember.
Nope.
The name
all right, forget it. But just like how you can scan the barcode and the robot goes and picks out the right tool
the
and then orders the right tool and all the pieces of the puzzle.
Yes, sir.
Well, we've been marveling over that whole machinery for the past week now. That was one of Tom's favorite toys. Is that
the picker?
Yeah, is that retriever. Yeah, because I was telling Tom about how much my dad would really love that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he... Not to throw any students under the bus over there, but there's definitely some rat-scallions over there that don't necessarily put
abscond with the monkey wrench.
Yeah. So go back and fill. Here you're talking about the Snap-on tool.
Yeah. Snap-on, yeah.
And just they had the vending machines, right. But then there are also those great big tool chests.
Yeah. Drawers, wow. Right?
Right. With your ID badge.
With your ID badge.
You scan it and you pull the tool out and you acknowledge that it's yours. And so everybody knows, the system knows who has that tool and who's responsible for it. So if it's not there by the end of the day.
So halfway through, I needed an extension cord to plug my laptop because the battery pack that Joe Salamone had given me wasn't connecting to the laptop. And he went over to one of those, it looks like the vending machine you get the candy bar out of. And he got a blue extension cord.
Yep.
Yeah, I know. And there's, laptops in there, whatever they...
Yeah, pens, I mean, all kinds. Whatever a student might need, you can do that. And then obviously, tracking and making sure that people are responsible for it is one thing, but just for consumables, there's just... reordering.
Right? Yeah.
So it's just it's just keeping track of how you so you don't need to keep boxes of this stuff.
Right.
You just know that we're down, we've used up 100 pens, now we need to order 100 new pens. And that happens regularly, and so you don't have boxes and boxes of this stuff, whether it's pens or pads.
They were talking to us a little bit about I'm sure that they mentioned it on air the open systems, right? The purposefully seeing the HVAC systems, the purposefully seeing the paper towels, right? So the one dispenser was hand sanitizer, paper towels, things like that, that students can see that when you need paper towels, they're not just coming from a paper towel fairy, right?
Right.
And that they have a system where, when you push the numbers and you pull it out and it gets to a certain number, it notifies the vendor that they're running low on paper towels or that they're running low on gloves. And I like that they're not just doing that. Someone is already doing that for the school, right? Like theoretically, every school, someone's ordering toilet paper. But now they're doing it front facing where students are also seeing that someone's ordering toilet paper. It's not just stuffed in a back warehouse. It's saying, hey, when you're, using
and
that,
what
that's
do they
what
call the not, how they have it set up though with the different areas and then like those Snap-on toolboxes that line, because they can then be rolled whether they're going to be used in an automotive class or an HVAC class.
I don't know what the word is, but definitely they've thought about it being everything being mobile and modular, they can, I think that might be the word, to transform classrooms depending on the setup.
Quick break at 7:30 here on Hudson Valley Focus Live. Johnny Ann Hansen, Harold King in studio. We've been kind of recounting some of the things that we did on that Friday, October 3rd, Manufacturing Day. Back in a minute on The Beacon.
He's the voice of the valley. Hudson Valley Focus with Tom Sipas on The Beacon.
We are back at 7:34 on Hudson Valley Focus Live. I want to thank Nina for her little note here. The Wayback Machine's the best. Thank you, Robbie and Tom. Scandalous 60s music. Oh, we've got more going to be coming up with here in the next few days. Got it. There's a lot of stuff going on. And in order to maintain some degree of sanity or what we think is sane, you got to give it a break once in a while.
Yeah, absolutely. And have a little fun.
Have a little fun. And one way is, though, too, but you want a little peace of mind, you might want to give visitdshomeservices.com a little visit. Perhaps this is the year you put in the Generac Whole House Automatic Generator System. And I kid you not that we're going to coming up on 3 years this week since we've already put our system in. Seven or eight power outages later. Yeah. And
nice. Talk about peace of mind.
One time, we were in Colorado.
Right. That's huge. By the time I
got the text, we think your power's out, and I looked at the app on there from Generac. No. Generator's already been running for 9 minutes. It's all good.
We didn't
come home to find, the refrigerator melted and the freezer melted on the floor.
Yeah, that's a nightmare.
Technology is pretty amazing. It really is. Generac, by the way, is moving a lot of their manufacturing back to the United States.
Oh, good.
Oh.
Yeah, and they've had, you know, big demand for their products.
Oh, huge. Yeah.
And so this
was one just installed in our office. And it's been, I don't even know why. Maybe for the ambulance people upstairs, the EMT folks. Maybe. They need
it. But it looks nice.
Harold, this goes to what you and I have spoken about for decades, about the ecosystem. So we've got, you know, our BOCES folks being learned how to install these systems, the advanced HVAC systems, the new heat pumps down the road. We've got the Dutchess Mechatronics lab here. How do you keep all this stuff maintained? These are the young people.
These are it, absolutely.
Not even young.
No,
all ages.
Adult ages. Classes as well.
Yeah. And that's why we need it, because not all the current technicians are young. You're just going to have that, you know, aging workforce as well. And I think you mentioned it. They're definitely investing in the HVAC program at DCC at the Mechatronics Lab as well. So that's probably their next big announcement or ribbon cutting coming. But they've made a lot of movement in that as well.
Yeah. So I've been a member of the Dutchess BOCES Advisory Board for more than 20 years, but I was never able to attend because the meetings are in the morning.
Okay.
So 2 weeks from today, though, on the evening of October 28th, they're going to have a 5 to 7 p.m. meeting, and the culinary students are going to be fixing dinner.
Nice.
And so I've never been over there, Harold.
To the new building.
It's really get a hold of them and see if I can maybe go an hour early and tour the building.
Yeah, it's very beforehand. Nice. It's almost, and you know, we've been talking a lot about Ulster BOCES and their success, but Dutchess BOCES is really packing them in as well. A lot of students' enrollment is way up.
A lot of these programs,
they're over-enrolled. Right?
Johnny
Ann said she's never bored. You know, kind of our this challenge that's been brewing, it's been around for a while, but it's really coming to a head is finding instructors and getting to that next stage. And you know, because if it's one thing to say, well, let's, you know, we've got enough kids, let's have another section of that, of, you know, HVAC or machining, and finding someone to teach that is
very
not
difficult.
Easy. It's very difficult. It's where that kind of that demographic challenge and because you can make a lot of money in the field.
Sure.
It is difficult. So we're working on trying to find some partial solutions. You know, we're not going to solve the problem overnight,
right. but we can throw one starfish back. We can handle
that's
we can do that.
Honestly, we got to keep that in mind.
Well, sometimes some of the trades back a month or so ago, we talked about some of this is really hard work.
Absolutely.
Oh yeah.
And particularly in the construction trades, it does take a physical toll on you. And you know, so some of these instructors who, you know, are maybe now in their 40s or 50s, they've been in the trade for 20 years to be able to get a process together so that they can go into academics and transfer that knowledge, just like, you know, Robbie's dad is doing in the plumbing field. That's exactly what we need to be, you know,
and
promoting.
I think a couple of years ago, I mean, I've only been here a minute, but when I first started, I remember having conversations where the academic institutions were making it really hard.
Yes.
And I think not everybody, but a lot of them have changed that a little bit. Yeah, so
I would maybe still not say the institutions, but the state.
I think that state
and the Board of Regents were, you know, having those bars.
Yeah, sure. So I think, like, I know that Rockland Community College is in need of technician instructors, whether it's machining, maintenance, all of the above. But they have a program set up to just be like, we don't need you to know how to teach necessarily anything. We need you to have the skills as an individual who's done this for a living, and we'll put you through the credentialing process to get you the pieces that set up a Brightspace, and so you can, you know, log in and do that stuff and set the curriculum up and things that are hard or intimidating.
Right, lesson plans, all those things. Yeah,
I would say that if someone was listening just in that situation and they're like, you know, I thought about this at one point in time, but it seems really daunting to do all that stuff. Right now, it feels like the partners locally have some resources that could help that connect those dots.
Well, that sounds like, you know, here in our region, for me to get some guests on the show from the BOCES, whatever, and actually talk about that facet of it, because I mean, this is a real problem.
That's a really good point.
Johnny Ann, when you were talking about that, I'm reminded of, you know, the years I had the insurance business, and I would have a tradesperson who'd be, you know, an electrician or whatever, and want to start their own business.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's one thing to be a tradesperson, and it's another thing to be able to take that set up the business and, you know, the insurance and the workers' compensation and the labor law stuff. And that's what reminded me. So you're talking about here, and I bet more than half of those tradespeople would fail at starting their own business. Yeah, technicians, but would fail at their own business. So the same thing to move from the tradesperson into education is a parallel to that. But if they can have then someone in the system
guiding them through, giving them the resources, setting up some of that. I mean, I know, you know, personally we've talked that I teach as an adjunct, and the actual topic isn't hard. Those 3 hours a week in front of the students, that's not hard. The hard stuff is coming up with those lesson plans, thinking about what exam you're going to do, what's the scheduling of how that goes. And if there's somebody that just walks you through it and says, these are the objectives, this is how we're going to get it. I mean, some programs did even a co-teaching kind of model where they'll set you up with an existing instructor who kind of comes from the academic side.
Right. And you know, we talked about the $1 million that Haas had donated for that. One of the other things that they do along with that is they have Mark Harris. Yeah. And Allendale Machinery has Mark as basically just going and helping teachers teach.
Wow.
and he's teaching himself in a lot of places.
Sure.
But he's just going to school districts or community colleges and saying, oh, you want to do this program? Well, here's lesson plans. Here's best tips. Wow. Here's how you do this. And we know he was a great teacher.
Absolutely.
And his son's
son now, Miles son's was
also a great teacher. Yeah. So, I mean, that's a tremendous service that they're providing. Yeah. And really, it's a cost to Allendale to have Mark. I mean, he's not an inexpensive person, but it is very generous, and it is kind of building the workforce that they need, and it's very helpful.
Johnny, and to your point about it is very rewarding to do that kind of teaching.
Yeah,
I think it was about 3 years when I was co-teaching the business integrity course in the School of Business, and attorney Stu Brody would come down from Albany, and he actually was the lead person. He was an attorney, but for 3 years, I did every single class with him, and watching the students change over a semester's time is very rewarding. Yeah. And then the other Harold was the. When I set up along with the staff over there, the debate teams.
Yep.
And it was, it was great.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's fun to see that. It's fun to, I think, faculty adjunct. I mean, that also makes for a good community at the school, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's nice to have academicians and faculty are great, but having adjuncts come in who have the little industry experience and, like yourself, Tom, to be there present with the students, I think that made the School of Business experience for all the students a much more positive overall experience.
And it was one thing, too, and we'll take a break here in a second. One thing too, when I was first, and I can't believe it's almost 26 years ago that Hottie formed that advisory board, and I joined in January of 2000. Right, I think it was formed in October.
That's funny. Gotta look at our notes. In that same context, we have an annual lunch coming up, but one of the announcements about that came from when Dr. Bowden spoke at our annual lunch, and he talked about the advisory boards we were setting up for the school business with Adi, and it was a long time ago.
but watching that change, and when I was asked to join, I was like, what do I bring to this? I mean, most everybody there was the president of a bank or a utility or something. Yeah. And well, when you run your own business and you have to keep up with your professional skills of insurance, financial services, new forms of competition, automation, personnel requirements. Oh, wait a minute.
Yeah. Right,
you got to make that whole thing work together.
I say that the Newport School of Business is an extremely successful. It's a great program. It's a great school, and in large part due to Dr. Salavitabar's hard work. But the people that he brought on that advisory board really made a huge difference.
Yes.
And he had an intentional group. It was a diverse group. It was like you said. you know, CEOs, hospital administrators, utility executives.
Taylor Thompson as an entrepreneur, innovators,
manufacturers, a lot of bankers, but also just really good people who cared. And when the accreditation process, and we could talk about this forever.
Yes.
But when that came along, you know, one of the strengths was that advisory board, and it really helped. And I think that made the school very successful.
Well, I will take
a strong foundation.
And I will forever take pride in the fact that the accreditation folks said it was the best integrity program they had ever
seen.
That's
good to hear. Well, and that was something that you were the champion of early on, pre-Enron.
Never ask the question, what do we teach for ethics and integrity? 7:46 on Hudson Valley Focus. Let's get in the Zoles Sports Report and then back to wrap it up with Harold and John. But don't go anywhere. We got a lot to do from now until 9 o'clock this morning here on the Beacon.
Wake up informed. It's Hudson Valley Focus with Tom Sipas on the Beacon.
It is Hudson Valley Focus on the Beacon with my friends. And coming up after 8 o'clock this morning, speaking of friends on the show, Les McCarthy going to be in studio with me. The ALS Hudson Valley Walk is this Sunday. And Les will be in with the details about that. Looking forward to it. Right now, back to my conversation with Harold King, John Ann Hansen. If you have not yet visited the councilofindustry.org website, please do. Just become familiar with it and help pass that information on. Educate other folks about the businesses that are out here and you know what manufacturing looks like today. Harold, we've come a long way.
It is. It's nice to look back once in a while and look where we are now, and it's rewarding. It definitely is. Definitely. Still so much more to do.
Well, you know what, though? You know what? Maybe next week, talking about snarky, somebody sent me by way of Facebook, about manufacturing from a Nobel Prize winning economist. About the fact that it's not worth it to worry about bringing jobs back here. Robots are going to do the work. And I think next week I'm going to play. It's only a couple minutes long. I think I'm going to play that for you. I want your feedback on this.
Sure.
But it really goes to the fact that here's somebody with a podium, Nobel Prize winning. I think he, you know, probably was active when Abraham Lincoln was president or something. But this, why am I saying that? Because keeping people up to date with where we are, really still a huge problem.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I mean, there's, it's not as huge as it was. I think there's a lot of, obviously, you know, manufacturing's in the news, manufacturing's important, reshoring, tariffs. It's a lot of discussion about manufacturing. I'd say 20% of the news conversation has something to do with manufacturing.
But that kind of misinformation then, though, from an individual of that stature.
It's probably somebody just kind of taking a position. And listen, you want to talk about automation and artificial intelligence. Is it going to change the way we manufacture? Absolutely. But does that diminish the fact that we should manufacture here?
Not at all. But also, a lot of what he's talking about, well, robotics are going to replace all this. It will offload a lot
of the repetitive. And exactly. Even if the robots are making the robots, then, you know, then none of us have to work.
And then we'll install them and to maintain them and to do all of the other things. And that's the point.
I mean, listen, there are academic, economic theories about all this, and then there's, you know, the way things actually work on the ground, and that's, I mean, we live that every day. We see decisions being made about whether to hire more people or to automate, what technology to implement. You know, we always talk about, you know, what keeps CEOs up at night, and they've got to think about all these things. One of the things they have to think about is, you know, how to remain competitive and what technologies to employ. And it's coming at them fast. And there's a lot of choices. And you know, you don't want to pick the wrong one.
I'll go back to what I said earlier. Go back to, you know, the insurance business 45 years ago. And I actually went back to Dutchess Community College and took the small business management, advanced marketing.
Yep.
I had the same instructor who Ted Clark had, who was a marketing professor at New Pulse and George Friedman. And but again, in the process of automation was taking over. So by the time we sold the business,
We had half a number of employees, but we had automated everything. Everybody had document imaging at their fingertips.
Yeah.
And 10 years back.
Wow. And listen, you mentioned economists. So the Nobel Prize for Economics went to three economists who created a model to measure creative destruction. So, which is kind of what we're talking
article.
About here,
right?
So, you know, these things happen and things go away and they get replaced by new things that are, you know, more efficient, more effective. And I think that's nowhere more prevalent than in manufacturing. And we will see what comes next. Is it going to be a massive employer in the future? Yeah. I don't know. We're going to make a lot of stuff
right in front of me here with
Joseph
Schumpeter and creative destruction, coincidentally.
Yeah, there you go.
So, but these are expressions, the crisis of the American tax state. In 1918, Austrian political scientist Joseph Schumpeter delivered a now famous lecture titled The Crisis of the Tax State, and talking about, and then on to creative destruction. We look what's happening and all. But keeping all of this, all those balls in the air at the same time is
also
not easy.
You know, we talked a little bit about Snap-on and their technologies and that helps students be prepared for what the workforce looks like. And in some cases, that may help students be almost more informed when they go into the workforce. So they might go to someone who doesn't have that automation and technology yet, but they maybe be the one to bring those ideas. So I think as much as technology and automation is going to disrupt and is disrupting, it's not disrupting all companies at the exact same time. There are some companies who don't necessarily even have the financial bandwidth to invest in automation to that level. So it's not like it's just one switch and we hand everybody out some robot and everyone can do these things. The whole process of it will in itself take time. And to your point of who needs to build those robots, program those robots, maintain those robots, there's still a lot of work that needs to be done.
Yeah, for sure. And it's, you know, we had a really good conversation. I think we mentioned this roundtable conversation with our few CEOs about all this stuff. And, you know, you can be panicked about artificial intelligence and agentic AI, or you can look at it and you can say, oh my God, this is great. This, I've been trying to figure out how to do this for the last 16 years. We've struggled with how to do this. And now like this program, if I give it the right information, it's going to give me the answers I need. And that's whether that's, you know, scheduling their production or, you know, finding new markets. It's just about how they embrace it and how they utilize it.
Yeah. Well, keeping up with our individual skills through lifelong learning. I don't care whether AI comes along
100%. Or not. Yeah. You need to know.
You need to know. And to get, sometimes actually to get back in the classroom, not to be intimidated of getting back into the classroom.
I think that's probably the message when everyone's fearful of what happens with technology and automation and AI, is that that resource is just as much at your fingertips as it is at my fingertips. I just showed my dad how to use AI this week. My sister is, you know, retired, but she's doing more with that than ever before because, you know, she's an inquisitive person who I'm just like, you know what, if you wanted a business plan for that, you could have the outlines of a business plan for that in 30 minutes, where before you're literally sitting with a blank piece of paper. So I think it's really an ownership piece that everybody at any age should say, how can I just be more engaged myself and learn more?
But here's the art and science of it.
Yes.
You can have all the programs you want.
Yeah.
But if you aren't the artist to use the tools or whatever.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, the beauty of it.
Yeah. And I think that's what I mean is, like, own it, right? Like, the world is changing. You also probably just need to to do something about that. You need to show up and learn that information, just like you needed to learn how to use the Netflix. Like, you just have to learn new things. I know. Sorry, Harold. Maybe you don't need to learn how to use Netflix.
I'm afraid of the interwebs.
Programmed in your eyelid soon. You'll be fine. You won't have to worry about that at all.
Well, you know, we're talking about meeting good people, keeping attuned to what's going on, and constantly reinventing ourselves.
Connecting the dots. Yeah.
And I think if you were to talk to, you talk to Frank and Rich and Jimmy Ferrero at Manufacturing Day, if you were to talk to them and ask about like what the, the best thing about, one of the best things about Ulster BOCES and the students there, I think eventually you'd get to this. They are that next generation workforce. What they're learning here, they're going to employ. As
yes.
to Johnny Ann's point, they're bringing that knowledge and creativity with them.
We're going to continue this conversation next week. It is 7:59, closing on at 8 o'clock on this Tuesday morning. Les McCarthy, ALS Walk next, and then back in a minute on The Beacon with another word for the Beacon Morning Money Grab.